Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories. Good morning. You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, campus community radio from Simon Fraser University, broadcasting on the unceded territory of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, Stolo, Katsi, Kwikwetlem, and other Coast Salish peoples. My name is Jesse. Today's episode produced remotely. Speaking to you right now from my living room from the past. Wow. Fun stuff. Today on the show, we are featuring an interview that Work Study Matthew did with local R&B artist Sade Awele, and a little bit of music from Sade, and then a fun little feature that I have been working on called Tape Rescue. I just named it right now. In the moment, I guess that's what it's called. That's going to be a fun excerpt from some cassette tapes that I found kicking around the station with some cool spoken word audio on them. I'm going to try to do this every now and again. I have a tape machine at my house now that I'm really enjoying playing around with and making fun music stuff on it. And I realized, hey, I can also grab cool old radio stuff and bring it back out of the archive into your ears, like I've been doing with music over the last little bit. So we'll get to that in a while. That'll be towards the end of the show. And for now, you can sit back, listen to some music by Sade Awele, and then hear Matthew's interview with Sade. This is Intuition by Sade Awele. Talk to you after. Enjoy.
My intuition telling me maybe this is meant to be. 'Cause every time I feel this strong pull, like this is something I could handle. But all the questions in my mind, asking is this the right time? My whirlwind of imaginations mixed with my infatuations of ya. If I press in, if I lean into it, if I hold fast, will I experience all of the places I've never been before? Fast paced and never changing carousel. My mind is ever rolling, and with you I'm ever flowing. I don't wanna lose this feeling, I don't. So I keep holding fast to the truth. It might be just what I need. Holding fast to the truth. It might be just what I need. Deny it. You might be what I've been searching for. I try, but I can hide it. Maybe this is what we're living for. Making memories we can't ignore. Oh, oh. A part of me wants to explore a love that lasts more and more. If I press in, if I lean into it, if I hold fast, will I experience all of the places I've never been before?
Just what I
Hello guests, today we've got with us Sadia Wele, and that was one of her songs, Intuition. She's a Nigerian-born, Vancouver-based singer-songwriter who is a captivating musical talent. Since releasing her debut single, Count On Me, in 2018, Sadi has continued to garner more and more buzz thanks to her string of critically acclaimed releases in the years. Hello Sadi, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Are you excited to be here?
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
So today I've got a couple of questions for you. We're just going to go from your beginning, your background, then we're going to go all the way to currently what you're up to, what you're doing, what do you plan to do with your musical career, and any other plans you've got. Yeah. So first question, we know that you moved from Nigeria to Vancouver. Like, we would like to know how, when was that and how was that? Was it a family decision or what went into that?
So I moved from Nigeria to Canada, and yes, it was a family decision. And it was, how was that? It was definitely a big change, you know, having had my formative years in Nigeria and having family out there and coming to a new country and coming to a new environment. Definitely, I wouldn't say it was necessarily culture shock per se, but I think the biggest thing was just getting used to the new normal. And yeah, pretty much all of my family is in Ontario. So to be out here also in BC is definitely different. It feels like I'm sort of a nomad sometimes.
Yeah, I understand that. And with your family, where did the love for music stem from? Was it already in your family, or was it something that you grew as you came to Canada?
Yeah, my love for music has been since I was a child. Like, we used to listen to music all the time growing up. It was where I definitely consider my family a musical family. And, you know, like the typical Nigerian household, especially Nigerian Christian household, that was sort of the culture at the time, to kind of like wake up in the morning and sing together and have devotion and all this stuff. And that was always my favorite part of the mornings, like kind of like singing together. And I didn't even realize that subconsciously I was falling in love with music, because I would always look forward to those moments. And then my father was a huge enthusiast. He loved jazz, he loved R&B, he loved everything. Like, he was such a massive, massive music enthusiast. So whenever he would play music, he'd be like, oh, can you hear, like, he'd usually be talking to my brothers, he'd be like, oh, can you hear the drums on that, can you hear the bass on that, can you hear the keys on that? But I was always paying attention, and I was like, all right, I like that, I like the sound of that. And that's sort of how my love for it evolved. And my dad definitely played a huge part in that, because he was the first person that ever told me that I could sing and sort of unleashed that talent.
That's kind of refreshing to hear, because typically when you hear like African families or like Nigerian household as well, it's like, oh, parents are always lawyer, doctor, engineer, go for one of those things. So it's even like, even if like you have a hobby, like, oh, don't, you can do the hobby on the side, but don't make it your main career. So how was that growing up as well? It was, did your family play a big part in supporting you towards your goals, or were they, like we all always hear, or like folks telling us that, oh, African household wants you to do this and that?
I would say it was definitely a mix. I think in the beginning for them, it was like, whoa, this is a hobby, Shade. Like, just put this aside and focus on all the other things that we want you to do. But I think as I grew as an artist, and as they saw my confidence grow, and as they saw sort of the impact that it was creating for other artists of color, other artists, other Nigerian artists, other artists that wanted to pursue music, I think it started to make more sense to them that, oh, this is, she actually has a voice in this, and she actually has a place in this. But it was definitely a process. In the beginning, it was just more of like, okay, whatever. But later, as I started to develop, I think it helped them believe in me more. But it definitely took me believing in myself for them to also build that confidence in me too.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
And is there a moment where it hits that, oh, this is something I actually want to do like for the rest of my life? Is there like an actual, like, do you think of those one time that you like?
Yeah, honestly, like, wait, do you mean, was there a time where I was like, I want to do this for the rest of my life?
Yeah.
Is that kind of what you mean?
Kind of.
Oh yeah, I will never forget. That was in 2017. That was the year where I was like, I'm doing this for the rest of my life. Like, I love this. Like, this makes me feel free. It makes me feel alive. This gives me so much purpose. And from that year, I would never forget, I was sitting in the car with my parents, and I was like, So guys, I want you to know that I'm going to be pursuing music like full on. I'm not playing around with this. And this was before I released Count On Me. And my dad was like, you know, like before I was a little bit afraid about what it would be like for you to pursue music. But I've seen the way you've grown. So, you know, go for it. They were both just like, okay, yeah, sure, go for it.
And I guess that was part of your decision to move to Vancouver specifically or BC?
It definitely was an influence, absolutely, because it was around that time that I moved to Vancouver. Before that, I was actually living I lived in a few places in Canada. Calgary was one of them. I've lived in Hamilton. I've lived in Ottawa, but specifically moving to Vancouver, that was the year. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. And have you gotten the chance to work with other creatives, or how's the career been like since you moved to Vancouver?
Yeah, I've had the opportunity to work with so many amazing artists here. And even if we haven't worked together in the studio, we've maybe performed together on stage at similar events or festivals and things like that. And definitely, it's been a supportive community. It's definitely, sometimes it can be isolating, especially as an artist, when you're in your own head and you have all these ideas of how you want your music to be, and you might go into your bubble for some time. But I would say generally I've been able to grow a community, like my band mates, I consider them my friends, because we've made music together for some time now, and we've toured together as well and things like that.
And you mentioned how you want your music to sound like. Is there what's the specific category? Would you describe the kind of music you want to make?
Yeah, I would say my music is for everybody, but it also really appeals to, I would say, the diasporic African. So the African that maybe grew up in an African country, but then moved to a foreign country and sort of has both that African and Western influence. I would say that my music really appeals to them, because it's sort of like combining two worlds. And I feel like I combine both the R&B world and the Afro soul, Afro beats world, because both of those have greatly influenced me and greatly influenced my love for music and all of that. So it definitely appeals to those two people. It appeals to people who love, who are enthusiasts, music enthusiasts. It also appeals to musicians, I would say, as well, like people who are also artists. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And what's the process that goes into it? You mentioned bandmates. So are they also involved in making up your music?
Yes, they're involved in the making of my music. Honestly, it varies so much. Like this morning I woke up, I had this song idea, I recorded it on my voice memo. Sometimes I use Logic to sort of work on sort of the pre-production of a lot of my songs, and I might just start fiddling around with my MIDI. I start fiddling around with some stems and develop some ideas from there. Or sometimes it might just be me and the bandmates jamming together, and then they're putting down something that sounds really sweet, and I'm like, all right, I have some lyrics to this. So it's very feeling based. It's based on how I'm feeling in the moment. It's based on what's inspiring me in the moment. And I also love developing melodies all the time. So I might not even have lyrics, but I might have a melody for something, and then I just sit down and then I record the melody into my phone, and then it becomes something later. So yeah.
And is it like a moment where you've experienced some sort of like writer's block, or the music isn't just flowing as it should, or you're not just feeling what you should feel?
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I went through that. I've had like a devastating time in my life, was sort of when I lost my dad, and right after that I couldn't create. Like at first I could create, and then afterwards I went through this phase where I couldn't create at all, and I was just so that year I barely released anything. I think maybe I released like one single, managed to, and I had even recorded that single like the year prior. So it sort of shook my world, and I wasn't able to create anything. But I realized that with writer's block, sometimes it's a moment to pay attention to yourself, to your mind, to your body, to your body's talking to you in that moment and needs some care and attention, and needs you to sort of drift away from all that creativity and focus on what's inside. And then from that, I learned that creativity also can span. Creativity is not just about writing a song. It's not just about creating melodies, but it's also about the people that you develop relationships with, the places that you travel to, the experiences that you have with people around you, being in nature, being just allowing yourself to experience the world around you is where creativity stems from. So I definitely learned that from the writer's block. And I also learned to be patient with myself and allow it to pass. Like the gift is already there. It's just allowing that process to go away and that time to pass. And then, you know, everything will be fine. So, yeah.
So you mentioned you had a really tough time, especially with your dad passing, where you had a whole writer's block. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask specifically in regards to mental health. Mm-hmm. Was there anything that you sought out to do outside trying to pour some to your music?
Yeah. One of the big things that I had to do was get a therapist. And I know, like, even saying that, I know that it's very hard for a lot of artists to be able to do that because it's expensive. And a lot of times you're contemplating between being able to buy groceries versus get a therapist. And I know that there's a lot of organizations now that also offer grants to help artists be able to afford it. But I felt like that was so important for me to have someone that I could talk to. And she specializes in, you know, grief and all that. So it really helped me. It really helped me work through my emotions and my feelings. And the thing about it too, like going through grief, is that it's an emotional roller coaster. Sometimes you think you're okay, then something can trigger the emotions. You could even be performing and the next thing you feel like crying. Like there's so many things that could trigger the feelings, and it's important to take care of yourself. And I know for me, I had to get to the point of just accepting that this is where I'm at and not feeling ashamed that I'm going through those emotions, and just allowing myself to feel, allowing myself to go through the hurt, allow myself to cry, and then surrounding myself with encouraging people, surrounding myself with people who were speaking life to me, surrounding myself with people who had my best interest really helped me get through those challenging times. Yeah. And praying. I believe very strongly in praying, and that just kind of just helped me to center my mind and just, you know, whether I was angry, whatever emotions I was feeling, it didn't matter. Like I felt, you know, just confident enough to just do that and just be in that space, and it just helped me get better. Yeah.
You mentioned that your focus is mainly on like the African and diaspora people who have like African and moved and move around and have the Western and African influence, but you know, like we all know, like from the African household, there's that kind of like stigma. It's like, what is therapy? What is mental health? You don't have. Like you can't have mental health like you are in my household.
Yeah.
So was there, do you feel like there was that part also like holding you back from pursuing like the help that you needed?
Yeah, like definitely in the beginning, I was influenced by the stigma of, you know, if you go to see a therapist, then there must be something seriously wrong with you, or like you're not able to navigate your life. Like, why do you need somebody else to kind of, you know, help you with all of that? And I was desperate. Like I was struggling so much. I wasn't able to kind of get through my day. So for me, I had to look online and look at resources and people who had gone through therapy, and talk to my friends who had gone through therapy that were also Black, and talk to them like, okay, how did this help you? Like, I need to understand, like, why did you feel you needed to go through therapy, and what changes did it make for your life? And when I saw the difference in their life and the ways that it helped them heal from whatever things they were going through, I was like, man, I'm gonna do this. Like it just made so much sense. And you know, it's important that we break away from that stigma. Definitely, I think it will definitely help. It will help our community, the Black community. Yeah,
that's good. And then you mentioned our praying, so I'm assuming that you're still like close with God.
Like God is a huge part of my life, and spirituality is a huge part of my life. Like I feel like it keeps me grounded, keeps me humble, keeps me focused, and it just helps me get through my day. Especially with the way the world is right now.
Yeah.
It's going upside down. I'm like, I just need that constantly. So yeah, God is definitely a part of my life.
And I know over here it's not like really a big thing, but it's like I've noticed that like back home it's like everything is like you have to pray and get whatever you need, like to persevere in life.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's what we're raised with.
Yeah.
But like over here it's like, it's more of like, oh, you have to like struggle back with your own blood. So like how
work hard
to get what you want. You're not depending on any like external force.
Yeah.
So like how was that like that move, like when you moved there, like how was that like reconciling? Was there a time that you had like a dip in your spirituality?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like definitely. Like there was a time where I felt like, oh, I am so sufficient. And then when I sort of, you know, start going through struggles, I'm like, God, help me, please. So then I realized that it's actually important to have both. Like it's important to put in that work hard and be diligent at what you do, but it's also important to have that grounding and, you know, it's like that foundation. It just allows you to navigate life. And I know like everyone has like their own different opinions, but for me, I guess maybe because of my life experiences, it has allowed me, the certain miracles that have happened in my life allow me to just believe that there's certain things that I'm like, nah, that had to have been God doing something over there. So for me, I sort of balance the two. I don't believe in just like praying and not doing anything. Like that's like, okay, what are you doing? It's like, you've got to put in the work. You've got to still like work hard. I think it's important for them to go kind of hand in hand, and then you sort of, you know, work towards your destiny. So yeah.
Yeah, that's good. And then you spoke about reaching out to Black creatives in the industry to see, to get advice on for like help. I was going to ask when it comes to like racism in the industry, like especially in Vancouver, like how to like, is there that kind of support for people of color or specifically Black people?
Yeah. It's a mixed bag. Like, I think there could be more support for sure. I know that there are certain spaces that are being created where Black people can come together and talk about sort of their challenges, especially in a province like British Columbia, where we don't have a lot of Black people. We have very small communities that are really paving the way to help people of color and Black people to have a space where, whether it's a space where they can sort of create together or a space where they can talk about mental health. I'm definitely seeing that, you know, you have Black Women Connect Vancouver, you have Couch Jams, you have Ethos Lab, you have, you know, there's some other communities and groups like that that are coming together to really sort of be pioneers for Black people and for people of color. So we still need more of it, because I'm still seeing a lot of Black people struggling. But as long as these communities continue to be supported, then we'll be able to see more stem from that. So yeah.
I also wanted to know your opinion on the internet specifically, how it's, or how you're utilizing it to push your career forward. Is there any label you're working with, or even if you're working alone, how are you pushing it through different platforms, and how do you plan to keep on doing that?
Yeah, like definitely it takes a team to work on music. So right now I have a distributor. I'm lucky enough to have a distributor that helps me with the distribution of my music. And in addition to them, I also have a small team, and we work together and we strategize together on releases. So in addition to those, obviously the internet plays a huge role in music, which is kind of a good and a bad thing, because sometimes I feel like we get lost in the trends and we want to follow the trends for the sake of, you know, growing a following and building an audience and all of those things. But it's important to still focus on like what the purpose is behind that. Otherwise you get lost in sort of just trying to build following for following's sake. So I try to be intentional with whatever I'm posting. I still try to make sure that it's in line with where I'm trying to go with my trajectory, with my brand. But I would definitely say Instagram and, you know, all the different platforms, TikTok, they've all been a great way for me to meet so many incredible artists and people. And I've gotten the opportunity to network with so many great people that even some of them became a part of my team because of social media. So I would say that the internet is really good. It just comes down to how you use it. And it's important not to compare yourself. And obviously, it's easier said than done, but it's really important not to compare yourself with other artists that are on there, because you don't know their story, you don't know their background. So it's just kind of like focusing on your own lane is important, and taking breaks. But yeah, so it's sort of like a blessing and a curse depending on how you use it.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of like it depends on how you use it. And even with the artists, is there any creatives or artists specifically you would want to work with in the future?
Oh my gosh, I have so many that I'd love to work with. I'm a huge fan of K-Tronada. He's based out in Montreal, and I'm like, He's on my list one day to have a song with him. I'm a huge fan of Pierre Quenders. He's also based in Montreal. Vancouver specifically, I love Kimmortal. She's so talented, or they are so talented, and I'd love to work with them. I love Missy D is also pretty cool, is very cool. Good vibes. Love to work with Missy D. Who else? Asaya is another really cool artist based out here as well. Would love to do some collaborations when the time ever allows. And yeah, it's like, so the list goes on. There's so many good local talent that are doing incredible things that I would love to collaborate with. Yeah.
And that's good. And is there any upcoming shows that you're planning to do, or you're planning to perform at?
Yeah. So on the 28th, I'll be performing at the Brewhalla Festival, 28th of October. And that's going to be in Cloverdale, which I think is close to Surrey. After that, I might be on like a little hiatus because I'm going to be going on a tour next year. I'm working on a Canadian tour, and I'm very, very excited about that because I haven't done like a proper Canadian tour before. So I'm really stoked, and I want to really give it the time and the attention and the care that it needs to create like a very special show for everyone. So
you mentioned the Canadian tour. Happy for you. I'd like to know the logistics though, like what goes into that specifically. So how is the planning, where you're gonna go, where you decide the tickets they're gonna get?
Yeah, it's a lot of things, and that's why sort of the planning stage happens around this time, because there's a lot of moving parts. You have the performance aspect of it. You have the project management aspect of it, which is sort of logistics of figuring out the venues, the venue sizes. In terms of the locations, that's based on statistics. So using their different statistics. So there's like Chartmetric or Spotify, or there's some other metrics out there that allow me to see what cities enjoy the music the most in Canada, and those help me determine the locations to perform at. So based on that, then also determining like the locations is also dependent on obviously cost as well, because you know I would love to be at the stage where I have hundreds of millions of dollars, hopefully one day put that in the air, but until then I have to be very careful about, you know, how to manage costs and all that. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. I think the biggest thing is having either an agent or a tour manager, or even like just a team leader, someone to just work with and plan and strategize with. And so that's sort of the stage that I'm at the stage of planning. And and then there's the social media aspect, like what are we going to be posting on social media to promote the show and advertising. So there's a lot of moving parts.
That is a lot. I never thought like there was a lot that went into it.
Oh my gosh.
Never, just like, oh, they're going on tour. It's just like, yeah, I'm going to show up.
Yeah. So many moving parts. And then you have to make sure that, you know, if you're going with the band, making sure that they're okay as well, making sure that they're taking care of you know, accommodations, all those different things. I love it. Like, I really, really love it. But what makes it easier to plan is planning early and giving myself like more than enough time to strategize and, you know, get all my ducks in a row, basically. Yeah.
That sounds a lot, but then it's good.
Yeah.
And is there a favorite song that you always look forward to performing? Do you have a favorite song?
A favorite song, yeah, like I love, but of mine or
yeah,
like,
of yours?
Okay,
of yours.
A favorite song of mine that I love performing is called Dreams. It's an older song, like it came out in 2019, I think, but I just enjoy performing it because it's, I don't know, it's like a feel good song, and I find that people sort of enjoy it too, and they always vibe with it, and it sounds really great live. So yeah, it's one of my, it's always, a lot of the times it's always on my set list.
We're gonna play it right now, and then we're just gonna give it
No.
I hope one day my dreams will come true. Then with the stars and say, I made it. Is that what it means if you made it? Or is it just a concept of man made criteria? We follow the pattern of other bacteria. Expectations in my mind, I had a dream. I could be cool.
thank God I'm alive. Yeah. I got that extra drive. Get up, gear up. So what am I scared of? I've been prepared for the question that I ask, cause I fear for this path, the journey that I've been set for. Just set forth. The path don't make me. I got dreams. Gotta see where it takes me, even if it breaks me.
Comes and it goes. Sometimes it feels high. Sometimes it gets low. Sometimes if you just try, trust that you know that you'll find a way. You'll find a way. In my mind, I had a dream. I could be who I wanna be. Even if it went that way, I'll still be thankful. Cause it brought me here.
It brought me here.
It brought me here. So if you ask me tomorrow, when I think of this journey, I'm feeling good. Mama never said it would be good.
Mama never said it.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
Okay, listeners, that was James by Sadia Wele, featuring Bamzi and Dino. On to the next question. So if it wasn't for music, where would you be right now? Was there any career outlook you're looking at?
If I wasn't doing music, what would I be doing right now? That's so hard.
Yeah.
Especially because, like, even before doing music professionally, I was performing in school. I was performing, like, since I was a kid. So I'm like, what would I have been doing? I guess maybe acting. I feel like I would have still been expressing some form of artistic venture, like writing or poetry or, yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like when the art is there, no matter what you do, or like God kind of aligns, the universe kind of aligns you with your path. Regardless, so it's always gonna fall in place.
Yeah, exactly.
And is there a favorite musician that you admire? Honestly, I want African or Nigerian specifically, and then
Okay, Nigerian specifically. That is hard. Wow, because there's so many.
Yeah, so many good ones,
and for different reasons too. I love Tems. Like Tems is an incredible. Oh, yeah. Musician. I love her songwriting and I love her music, and I just the boldness and the sensitivity of her voice, the vulnerability, like I love the way that she performs. Burna Boy is incredible. Like he's changing the game, like in his production style, like the way that they incorporate samples into the Afrobeats. Like he's created a very unique lane for himself that's so inspiring. Wizkid is like the OG. Like, what's not to love about Wizkid, right? So it's so hard to like pick just one. And then there's also artists that inspired me that maybe may not necessarily be as commercial, like Usher. I grew up listening to Usher, and like she's an incredible musician, and she also inspired the way that I sing and the way that I write. So I gave you four.
No, that's honestly great, because honestly, those are also good artists that you mentioned right there.
Yeah.
But even speaking of Nigeria, do you have any plans to go back and possibly tour there sometime in the future?
Yes. Oh my gosh, I would love to. And not just Nigeria, I would love to tour. There's about four countries on my mind. Definitely Nigeria, Ghana, South Africa, and Tanzania. Those four places are on my mind at the very minimum to visit, because one, I have a few followers that are from those places, but also because I love their music, I love their art, I love the style, and obviously I'm Nigerian, so have to, yeah.
And then as a Nigerian, probably like favorite food?
Nigerian favorite food, definitely, egusi soup. Anything with egusi soup, I love. I love rice and egusi. I love pounded yam and egusi. I love plantain and egusi. Yeah.
And Vancouver's like, you, the spot you go to that you're trying to find all your food?
Sometimes Vansuya. Vansuya has egusi. Sometimes, I might be getting this wrong, but I think it's called I think it's called Abike, but I might be getting this so wrong. They're based out in Surrey. And it's like really, really good food. And it's not just even egusi. They have like suya, they have like pepper soup, like all kinds of like really good, really good food.
I think I don't know what you're talking about. It's like Alebi.
Alebi African cuisine. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, I think if you have time, you should check out Taste of Africa.
I've heard of Taste of Africa.
It's also like another business, more of like Ghanaian focused, okay. But it's also like they've got good jollof though, so you can check that one out.
All right,
about in your past or like even currently, like most trouble you've gotten into?
Most trouble that I've gotten into, like with my parents or like with people, or like
we know African parents. The numerous times we always get trouble. So
the one that I can think of right now, when I was younger, I didn't understand the difference between like telling like things that should stay in your family versus things that you can tell people. I didn't have any understanding of boundaries. So I would tell people anything. Like if my sister told me that, oh, I don't like that person because they have a big head, I'll be like, my sister told me that you my sister said you have a big head. And like one time I got in serious trouble for that because like my sister, like she had a really sharp mouth growing up. So she was always the first to diss people, and I would tell them I would download everything that she said. I'll be like, she said that you're this, she said that you're that. So we had this French teacher at the time. I'll never forget her in my life, Madame Chukwu. We had this French teacher, and then she was teaching us. And before she came to the house, my sister, I guess, was pissed off that day. And my sister was a teenager at the time, so like moody teenager. And I'm just like this young kid just trying to figure out life. And then my sister, I guess in conversation, she was like, this woman is a thief. Yeah, she's always stealing. Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, whoa, this is juicy information. So then I, like when we had our French class, I was like looking at my sister and I was like, tell her like what you said. My sister's like, what are you talking about? The thing you said. Like, and then my sister hisses and walks away like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then Madame Chuka looks at me and is like, what are you talking about? And I was like, my sister said that you're a thief.
Oh, my days.
I got in so much trouble. My parents were like, what did you say? Since that day, I've become the opposite. Like, I don't talk about anybody's business. I was like, Jack. But yeah, no, it was crazy. Madame Chukwu, I'll never forget.
Nowadays. Yeah, I think as kids, it's like, we all do our own thing. Like, all get in trouble for, like, a bunch of stupid stuff. But it's no more, to be honest.
Yeah.
But then we all know that music industry is like a very difficult industry to like function in or like even progress in. So like, what's the best piece of advice you've gotten from like anywhere, family? It can be from a fellow artist or anyone.
Yeah, and music industry is very tough to navigate. And one major thing that I've learned is not to compare myself with other artists. It is so important because as an artist, we have a voice, we have a gift, and it's important to focus, to harness your gift and focus on your own voice because you have a message to give. And regardless of whether you're still in the early stages or in the developed stage, it's important to focus on that. You can get inspiration from other artists, you can get inspiration from other people, but it shouldn't be so much that it makes you feel like you're not making progress. And that's the other thing. Progress is so relative. It might look like someone is so far ahead, and then a couple years down the line, everyone's like, oh, what happened to them? that person, or you might be looking like you're not that far ahead, and then all of a sudden you just take off. So it's important to really, really focus on your journey and also just be grateful, because even having this gift and being able to express it is such an amazing, beautiful thing. So just living every day with that gratitude, I believe it opens even more doors of opportunity, because it allows you to see things from a better lens rather than seeing it from the lens of being a disadvantage. And then also just making the best with what you have. Like, it's like, okay, if whatever you have is just like, you know, maybe you only work with one person as a producer, or like you have a small band, or you don't even have a band at all, you're like working with backing track, just make the best with whatever you have, and you'll see how you start to slowly grow and develop from there. Yeah.
And in regards to the music industry, how difficult is it is? Would you still want to change anything about it?
Yeah, definitely. I feel like in Canada specifically, the music industry for artists of color is very tough. Mm-hmm. I feel like the industry is still growing. It's still at its very early stages. And I find that it's hard to find spaces that appreciate music, especially R&B or Afrobeats or Afro Soul. It, as much as it is growing, like we have cities like Toronto that are pioneering and really trying to push. But at the same time, there's still a lot of room for growth. And I think that artists of color need to be represented better. Artists of color need to be given more spaces where they can express their art and given more opportunities to thrive. So yeah, there's definitely still a lot of work to be done when it comes to that. Yeah.
Oh, that's encouraging to hear. Mm-hmm. And does that go into kind of like what's next to you? Are you going to try and focus on more of like going into those spaces or creating those spaces or working with other like organizations to kind of like get your voice out there and like promote?
Yeah, like definitely more collaborations, more touring, and you know, the advantage of that is it gives the industry the opportunity to see what I'm able to do and what other artists are able to do, because I also want to put other artists on the map in these cities. So the hope is that we can collaborate with local artists in these cities that are artists of color, so that they can be given a space to perform their art, and hopefully that sort of shows like we have the capabilities to do this and to create something special, and that our culture is so powerful, and it's important for us to be to express that. So yeah,
thank you for joining me. That was Sadia Wille. She's a great talent that you should definitely be on the lookout for. This is CGSF 90.1 FM. I'm your host Matthew, and have a great day.
Sugar banana, my sweetie potato. Chat, you're so sweet. Oh.
3, 2, 1.
If there's a time, it is now. If there's a feeling, expression, I want it. I wanna capture this moment. Your smile, your heart. If there's a place, it is here. A place of rest, relaxation. With you.
Just you.
Ooh, you are sweet apple pie, sweet like cherry pie. You are so sweet, so sweet. Eyes like the sun, the stars are shining for you. Seasons might change, but you'll stay the same. Friends come and go, but you'll still remain. Oh, I can never get enough. I can never get enough. Do you know you are sweet apple pie, sweet like cherry. Sweet, so sweet. Eyes like the sun.
Sade. Sade. Like the singer, but I'm a singer too. Sade. 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 Not Sadie. Not Sade.
Welcome back to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. My name is Jesse. You just heard Apple Pie by Sade Awele. And before that, you heard Sade speaking with Public Affairs Department work study Matthew. Thanks to Matthew for putting that interview together. His first radio piece on the airwaves. So congrats to Matthew, and we'll look forward to some more cool stuff. And now we will move on to the much vaunted and hyped and long awaited segment, Tape Rescue, where I go back into another part of the CJSF archives and find cool spoken word audio from cassette tapes and bring them to your ears. And this one is also a cool confluence of my interests. It's on a cassette, and it's an episode of a program called Backroads Adventure Radio. Which features field recordings and interviews and sort of like a virtual travel cassette. I did some digging and found only three mentions of Backroads Adventure Radio on the internet, two references to it airing on CKUT out of Montreal in 1995 for 1 year, and a text description of an advertisement in a magazine for Backroads Adventure Radio that is simply the words Backroads Adventure Radio. The cassette tells me that this is an episode from September 27th, 1995, train ride to Churchill / canoeing on the Miramichi, and we are going to together listen to the canoe ride on the Miramichi, which features some Danish tourists. It features a fish story and the lovely sounds of paddling down the Miramichi River. So, without further ado, here is that. Let's rescue that tape.
The train between Churchill and Winnipeg. Coming up later, we visit some of the people who ride one of Canada's most isolated railroads. But first, a canoeist paddling down New Brunswick's Miramichi River. In just a minute, a trip down this legendary waterway. Welcome to Backroads, Canada's only outdoor adventure radio program. I'm Daryl Rochelle. Last fall, Backroads correspondent Bruce Thorson traveled across Canada. And on today's program, we'll hear his stories from Manitoba and New Brunswick. We'll start with Bruce's paddle down New Brunswick's Miramichi. He canoed with a guide from Clearwater Hollow Expeditions.
Bet you're going fishing all of the time. Baby going fishing too. Bet your life, your sweet life.
This is the Miramichi. The river runs from central New Brunswick for a distance of about 2.5 to 3 days of wilderness canoeing to about 2 to 3 days of canoeing through little villages along the river out into the Northumberland Strait on the east coast of New Brunswick. This run that we're going to do today is about a distance of about 15, 20 miles, and we're putting in here in Boystown, which is the geographical center of the province. And we're going to canoe from Boystown to Doketown. It's a distance of about 20 miles. We'll just, we'll lunch along one of the islands along the river, and we'll stop and have an opportunity to cross the swinging bridge, be a covered bridge used hundred years ago for stagecoaches. And we'll come out around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Those dulcet tones belong to Roger Clowater of Clearwater Hollow Expeditions, and he's going to be our guide and, I guess, canoe mate for today's edition of Backroads Adventure Radio on the Miramichi in central New Brunswick.
With his pole, any line.
He was going fishing, yes, he going fishing, baby gone fishing too. Put him in the pot, baby, put him in the pot.
Right off the top, Roger, when they told me I was coming here to do this trip, they said it was in Macdamy, and I thought, never heard of it. But I was happy to go there. On the other hand, when I found out I was going down the Miramichi River, for some reason, I felt I'd heard that name before, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it. I'm wondering why I might have heard of this river before.
The Miramichi River has long been a very well-known name in the salmon fishing circles, and it has attracted sportsmen from all over the world, so there's no doubt that you have heard of it before, Bruce.
Well, I'm no fisherman. That's definitely true. So maybe you could give me sort of a thumbnail sketch of what salmon fishing on the Miramichi is like. Why is it this river that's so good for salmon fishing?
It's a naturally clean, and there's no manufacturing on this river. It's just flows out of the central part of the province, and it's just absolutely wilderness. One stretch of it is about 3 days of just wilderness canoeing. You would not see even a village along the river in that stretch. You could run into anything from a moose down at the river shore drinking, or up to his shoulders in the river drinking water and feeding. You could find deer along the shore coming around to your campsite. You'd even see coyotes and even bear down to the shore. Something else that we used to have here and we don't anymore are caribou.
Well, besides the coyote, the bear, the salmon, Roger and myself, we're not alone out here on the river today, and the fishermen. Jules and Ingrid are two folks who are over in Canada. They eloped. They're from Holland, and they're just up ahead on the river. Maybe we'll catch up with them now and see how they're enjoying life on the Miramichi as newlyweds.
Achterstevoren.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Yeah. Yeah. You're fine. So we're out on the Miramichi here with Ingrid and Jules. Have you folks actually ever canoed before?
Yes, but it was a very long time ago.
Where was it?
In a very big plane park. Middle of Holland.
In Holland?
Yeah.
So you do a lot of canoeing in Holland? People canoe a lot in Holland?
No, not so much.
In the town where we live, in Delft, there are many canals, and tourists can canoe there.
Oh, canoe in the canal.
Yeah. So we see them in the summer every day in front of our house.
How does canoeing in a canal compare to canoeing on the Miramichi?
Yes,
very calm and quiet.
Yes.
No rapids and...
No nature. See only streets and running people and buildings and houses a year. Wherever you look, you only see very.
Right. Yeah. So Holland, you'll forgive me, I don't know that much about it. How much space, like out on the Miramichi here, we were just chatting a little earlier, you got a lot of room and a lot of wilderness. How does Holland compare in size and population? Sort of thing. How easy is it to get away in Holland and not have anyone around you?
It's very difficult to do.
Yeah.
There are 15 million people in a country the size one third of New Brunswick.
15 million.
15 million.
No.
Well, and there are some nature reserves
where
you can go, but they are fairly crowded too.
Okay. Well, we're approaching a fork in the river and a couple rocks, so we're going to let you guys go and we'll get on with our paddling here.
Ja, ho, wacht even. Het is nog wel onbereid.
Yep. We got you. So,
hold
on. No, got you. Fine.
Yeah.
Bet your life, your sweet life, are gonna catch more fish than you.
You could be doing anything on this river. When I say on the river, it's on the river or next to the river, and you'll hear a hoop.
A hoop?
A hoop.
Why a hoop?
Well, it goes back to the old lumberjack days.
Right.
After they've busted up a big log jam.
On the river, yeah.
On the river. And once the log jam was busted up, you had to look out because there were logs going everywhere.
Right.
I guess the hoop would sound something like this. Sorry, I broke up.
So it was very funny to break up a log jam. Okay.
Say it again.
I'll try her again then. The hoop would sound like... And there's a driver. So that's the Miramichi hoop and driver.
That's the hoop and driver. I broke up there. I think I have a chest cold. I think I just broke it up.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the other use of the hoop and driver.
Yeah, but
they haven't done the log jam or the log run on the river in quite a while. People still hooping and driving her?
People are still hooping and driving her. And I guess that's part of our culture.
Well, there you go. Backroads Adventure Radio teaches you, the listening public, the hoop and driver. The Miramichi hoop and driver. That's pretty good.
And finally, what would a day on the Miramichi be without a fish story? Retired guide Pearlie Clowater reels us in for this one. For Backroads, I'm Bruce Thorson.
Should I tell you my fish story? McCluskey's was a sporting goods store and a general store. They kept everything. So all the sportsmen used to go there and buy fly hooks and whatnot. So anyway, this night the sport came in there and this old Wes Hickey, he was a railroad man, section foreman, so he was in there. But this Marion got telling him that he caught an awful big salmon today. And Wes said, "How much did it weigh, sir?" And he told Wes it weighed 50 pounds. And Wes says, "I can't hardly believe that." So anyway, they let it go at that. So Wes, he told the story about him being down in what they call Hickey Pool. His name was Wes Hickey, and he was fishing in this Hickey Pool. And he said he was fishing away, and he got this bite. And he said he reeled her in. And what do you think he had on the hook? He said it was a lantern. You know what a lantern is.
Yeah.
And he said the lantern was lit.
Under the water.
Under the water. So the American said, "That's a quit a story." He said, "That's a great big lie."
Yeah.
And Wes says, "You take 20 pounds off your salmon, and I'll blow the lantern out."
That's a pretty good one.
That's a fish story, though.